Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Just stop by the Crazy Moose Casino in Mound Lake Terrace and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
Get in the freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Hewitt has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk. Happy to have you guys with us today. Talk about power today. We're going to talk about power. We're going to talk about the end. We're going to talk about really big, meaty, philosophical subjects, except we're going to do it without talking about philosophy or anything all that important at all. We're just going to talk about mostly Earl Thomas and a couple of things.
I got the power!
Power! That's what Howdy and I were doing on a road trip. Howdy's like, are you a car singer? Yeah, are you? Sure.
So we lots of car singing.
Yeah, a lot of car singing. Are you a shower singer? Yeah, I got in that shower, especially on game day.
But you guys are singing.
Game day, Ross. And I was getting all psyched up, getting myself ready
at
in the shower.
At the fire!
Yes.
You're singing about power, but you weren't singing Snaps, I Got the Power. What song are you singing?
Who was
there's
that?
There's a lot of Christian music that has power in it.
Oh, okay.
Lots and lots of that.
Got it.
For sure.
That does sound like a fun road trip.
You know what else we're doing today, though? I don't know if you prepared for this. We're talking Jakes today. We're talking Jake Heaps. We're talking Jake Browning. We're talking Jake Sermon. We're talking Jake Hayner. We're talking Jake Locker. I mean, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be power in Jakes today.
Power in Jakes.
There you go.
Sounds like a heck of a show.
Let's go.
If you're driving to work, I'm sure you haven't tuned out by now. The excitement of power in Jakes. It's that kind of day. Well, then ask your question because you put it up on Twitter yesterday.
Who's got the leverage right now? When it comes to Earl Thomas, now just over 8 days, not 2 months, not 2 weeks, just over the next 8 days before the draft, which will be a week from tomorrow night. Who's got the leverage in this game? Earl got the leverage? Earl not showing up? Earl, you know, holding out, rightfully so. And if I were in his spot, I'd probably advise him to do exactly what he's doing right now. Do the Seahawks have it? Just wait him out. You got him. You got him for next year. You got him at 8.5, in fact, on a salary cap number that's pretty favorable, especially a guy of his talent. Do the other 31 teams out there have it? Is they're just kind of waiting and waiting to see and knowing that, man, the inevitable here is there's going to be a friction between these two sides and they can't, Seahawks right now at least seemingly, can't find two guys to be bidding this thing up and really leveraging it with Dallas and somebody else? Or is Dallas even interested? So are the other teams, do they play some of this? Or is it simply this is, I don't know, I can't quantify any of this. That was my poll question yesterday.
I was the first person to vote in your poll.
And let me guess what you voted.
I happened to be looking at the computer.
What time was it?
It was about 4:40, 4:45.
It was an I don't know.
I voted I don't know. And I was first person. And by the way, a quarter of the people out there agree with me. I just voted I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know who has the leverage. I think I know what they should do, but I don't know how. Trying to figure out who has the leverage.
Well,
will tell you ultimately what is going to happen.
Ultimately, Marvin Demoff said to me, I was drafted in the third round, okay? I thought I was going to be a second-round pick, either to the Baltimore Ravens on draft day, where they said, if we take Chris McAllister, we're totally split. Ozzie Newsome, Brian Billick told me this. To my face, we are totally split in this building. Half of us want Dante Culpepper at 10. Half of us want Chris McAllister, the corner out of Arizona, at 10. Obviously, if we take Culpepper, we'll wish you the best. Not going to happen. If we go corner, we're going to take you with a 42nd pick, okay, in the second round. All right, so I had a pre-draft visit out there at Crab Cakes, had a good visit with Brian Billick, everything else. Brandon Stokely, hung out with him all weekend. He was on that visit as well. And okay, here we go. It's draft day. Here we go. I'm going to be the 42nd. Okay, they went Chris McAllister, guy I played against. Great, they went with him at 10. So even though all these other QBs went, I know that they're interested. And here it comes, right? Here's 35, here's 40, here's pick, I think, 42. I'm going to be a second-round pick. Come on, phone down in Puyallup. Ring. Phone didn't ring. Then it rang, and then it was Opa, you know, and my grandpa. Like, what's happening? Don't ever call this again. And then on the board, the Baltimore Ravens trade, and they trade for Tony Banks. I think he was with the Rams to begin his career, former Michigan State quarterback. So I don't know anything about it. My agent didn't know anything about it. None of us knew any of it. But on that draft day, they make that move. They trade for Tony Banks, and I am not a Baltimore Raven. Sometimes I wonder if I was, though. if I'd gone there and Tony Siragusa and Ray Lewis and that whole defense, and I had to just run the ball and play action and do what I did at Washington. Sometimes I do dream and wonder what would have been, what would have happened if I would have escaped the fishbowl that was everything I knew and headed east all the way across the country, knowing nobody. Sometimes I do think about that. But as a player, I feel like in these scenarios, you just have no control. So I absolutely voted the Seahawks in this one. I just feel...
But what about the rest of the league? I mean, I think that's what ends up throwing me for a loop, is it's great for the Seahawks to have all that level of control. You're right. If they're willing to accept very little,
yes,
then they do have that much control. But yes, do you think they're willing to accept a deal that's well below what they really want? I don't know that they can afford to do that with a player of Earl's caliber, just from a PR standpoint. Like, you can't sell Earl for nickels on the dollar. I mean, I think people will, I honestly think, and we've seen it in polls, and we've seen it in calls, and we've seen it in texts, the Seahawks fans will support a trade of Earl Thomas.
Yep.
You get back a reasonable value, maybe not even a first-round pick, but reasonable value, people will support it.
They support the Bennett trade?
Yes.
They support the Richard Sherman moving on to San Francisco?
Mostly,
for
yes.
Kind of?
Yes. But if after those two things, you trade Earl Thomas for a fifth-round pick, I don't think anybody supports that.
No.
I mean, and that's why the other people in the league, the other teams, they have a measure of a say in this whole thing. I liked what Bill Barnwell wrote yesterday. And if you guys had a chance to read this, Bill Barnwell, football writer, who knows where this stuff happens, but this is just some interesting scenarios of how the Seahawks draft day could play out. And I ask you, I guess, would you do this? He has the Seahawks making two trades either on or before the draft. Trading their number 18 pick to move back four spots to number 22 and acquiring a third and a fifth in the process.
I think that that's...
You make that deal?
Yes.
Anybody not make that deal? Would you go from 18 to 22 and pick up a third, which you need, and a fifth? You have to say yes to that, right? If it comes around?
I think so.
Without I mean, if you look at the Seahawks right now, first round pick, fourth round pick.
Yes.
That's it. And then a bunch of fifths and sevenths.
Yes.
That's all they've got right now. Yep. Nothing in the second or third round. If that deal is available from Buffalo, you make that deal.
And that is looking at the trade chart for Bill Barnwell. By the way, you ever watched Bill Barnwell with Scott Van Pelt?
No.
You ever up late enough?
Nope.
Bill Barnwell, you guys ever watch Bill Barnwell, Kyle? How do you guys ever see him?
Watched him?
Yeah, because Van Pelt loves him. He loves having him on. He's kind of quirky and different. Looks like John Malkovich to me. He every time he pops on, I think like Con Air or just John Malkovich in some of the different movies he's on.
John Malkovich, excuse me,
and is just a thinker. He's just a outside, like, he, even as he's talking, he's like, he is just a deeper level thinker, and this is tied to the draft charts. This isn't out of anywhere. This is the value charts, and he's looking at it.
So you would make that deal. I
would absolutely make that deal.
Now, would you trade Earl and a fourth round pick to Dallas for the number 19 pick in the draft, a third and a fifth?
Yes.
Earl and a fourth. For number 19, a third and a fifth.
Yeah, and I think he even included a player in that.
Oh, yes. You also get back, what's the guy's name? Byron Jones.
Byron Jones. I don't know if there was a fifth, but Byron Jones was in there.
Or maybe it was Byron Jones instead of the fifth. Excuse me.
Yeah. I would absolutely, I think, do both of those deals, and I would I think I would applaud both of those. And that is, frankly, what I've kind of asked in the parameters I put on John Schneider this offseason, is I would sure love to see you facilitate and get a trade done on your terms, you know, and I don't know if that can be done in this league, man. It's hard to do, especially with player, and John Clayton would tell you, and I think you've said it before, it's hard to do.
It is, but it's also football. Amazing that the wide discrepancy of what people see as trade value for a player like Earl. Barnwell looks at it and says, yeah, you give up a fourth round pick in addition to Earl, but you get back a number one, a number three, and you get a player.
And a starting caliber player.
And other people who look at these same things and have just as much knowledge say, yeah, second round pick.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe if you add something, you can move it up to a fourth. But in this case, you know, you're getting a first and a third. You got to give up the fourth in the process. Okay, but I'd rather have the third than the fourth.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden, in this scenario where you make both those deals, Seahawks have number 19, number 22,
yep,
a third round pick, yep, excuse me, two third round picks, and then you start picking again in the fifth. Like, that's not a bad draft considering where you started the whole thing.
No,
he's pretty darn good with two first rounds.
You could absolutely, and my player profile is going to be an offensive guard today. You absolutely, with one of those two, have a starting caliber guard because there's a few of those. You absolutely have that. And then you could find a pass rusher that comes in your rotation immediately and can be an impact player for you as well.
Yeah. Text message. Sorry, Mike. The fans may or may not be happy with the Earl trade, but they don't have a voice. You're just saying that to stir up controversy. I don't think the fans have a voice. I think that ultimately the Seahawks can't trade for nothing. that there has to be, you have to get something back.
Yep.
And whether, I mean, part of that is that the fans won't accept it, and part of it is that I don't think they'll accept it.
On the other side of it is Earl, you know, Boy Howdy and I talked about this. Does Earl have the card? Is Earl willing to do what Dwayne Brown did in Houston and just absolutely sit out everything, and I'll see you week number 8? I mean, does he really want to disconnect in that way from this city and this fan base forever?
I don't know, but we are 8 days away from the draft starting on Thursday, and I still think something's going to happen here between now and then. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, Lance McCullers was phenomenal again last night. I know that he gives up hits and runs and stuff to other teams, but I just don't feel like I've ever seen them. He was phenomenal against the Mariners once again, dazzling them with a fastball-curveball combination, mostly that curve. So go 7 innings, allow just a first-inning home run to Robbie Cano, and Astros win it 4-1, even the series at a game apiece. Dan Altavilla gives up the home run and takes the loss. There's not much to say. I mean, he was just awesome. Unfortunately, they weren't able to hit against one of the best guys going in the league right now, and unfortunately, the Astros have 5 aces on their team.
Do you ever see an elite curveball, like in your little league day? Was there anybody in your town you're like, oh my gosh, how do you hit that?
Yeah, there's one.
What was his name?
I'm blanking on the kid's name. He got drafted by the Yankees.
I remember one time, I believe we were in 14 under, Jimmy Stewart's dad, who was like a lefty pitcher, he pitched to, I don't know why I remember this BP, but the ball just moved. I was like, what was that? How do you hit that? Can you imagine standing in there, as silly as he made the Mariners guys look, and this is a good line, as silly and as awful as so many of the swings were, can you imagine sitting in there trying to hit the movement on that pitch and the command he had of it yesterday? Very, very difficult. And this is why the Astros won the World Series and why they're predicted to do so again. Because you know what? When he's on, you can't hit him. When Keuchel's on, you can't hit him. When Gerrit Cole's on, you can't hit him. When Verlander's on, you can't hit him. And they roll all those guys out. No, by the way,
don't sleep on Charlie Morton's not really bad. Good. A really good bullpen and a good lineup. That's fun.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
They're really good. Yeah. If they weren't the Astros and in the division, I'd be rooting for that team so hard. I find them so likable. Oh, my God. I love watching McCullers pitch. I love watching Springer play. You love watching Altuve. I love watching Correa. I like watching Bregman. Like, I really enjoy that team. I hate that I'm not supposed to like them.
Mariners.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Not as much fun.
Hey, speaking of the Mariners, we got some roster moves today. Here's how I see this playing out. Ariel Miranda started the game last night. I think he'll be sent down today in order to make room for Ben Gamel, who will come back and return. But then Erasmo Ramirez will need to come back for the start on Sunday. At that point, I think you probably send down one of the relievers on the team, and you go with 5 outfielders for a little while. The real question comes, though, when Ryan Healy's eventually able to return. I would think at that point that they got a real tough decision to make with Ichiro.
Yeah, and that's the roster flexibility. And we've heard this, you know, from Jerry for years, is trying to add some level of depth, especially in your rotation where you needed it last year because of so many of the injuries. But I think it also shows up, well, you know, how are you going to manage your bullpen? What kind of numbers do you want there? This quirky schedule here to begin this season, this month of April in particular, you know, provided some flexibility for you. And Erasmo coming back, and Ariel still has options. And, yeah, the roster flexibility, there's no question, has been a big part of what Jerry DePoto's done over the last few years. In a situation like this, I think, is a positive.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Russell Wilson's QB to QB show debuted on ESPN last night. He profiled 4 draft prospects. I watched some of it. Adam Schefter, meanwhile, says that Tom Brady hasn't committed to playing in 2018. We'll see what happens there. I actually thought the third story you might need to know about is that Shohei Ohtani may end up hitting the DL. We'll see what happens here. He ends up with a blister on his finger after getting rocked by the Red Sox last night. And all of a sudden, those Ohtani rules are maybe coming back to bite him.
Yeah, a little problematic for him. Yeah, Russell had some huge shoes to fill. That John Gruden QB camp became a very big deal, an Emmy Award-winning deal. And, you know, just I think also part of the whole John Gruden, you know, opportunity and marketing machine that got him back in the NFL making $10 million a year. He was excellent. He was an excellent broadcaster. He had an ability to deflect and get the most out of the people in that room. I did not have real high hopes for Russell. I know how hard that can be. He poured everything into it. It was fun. There were some good nuggets. I learned a few things. And in fact, in Blue 42, I learned a whole new football term from Russell that I think really encapsulates his game. And just a fun to see him and hear from him a little bit off the field as well.
All right, there you go. 3 or 4 or almost 5 things you need to know every day, of course, at 7:10. Yeah, I don't know, man. I struggle with those shows. I don't think I like Russell doing that. I love Russell the player, man. I really do. I love watching him play. He's one of my favorite people I've ever gotten to watch. I don't want to see.
And it really is like a Russell, though. If it was Aaron Rodgers doing it or Brady doing it, you're right. There's just really nobody that.
Yeah, I just don't want to see any current player doing that stuff.
Yep.
And like Gruden did it so well, it's hard to follow in those shoes. It's hard to make anything you do not seem like a humble brag.
Yep.
And I'm not blaming Russ. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch it. I'm happier not watching it and just watching Russell play.
I love that he tried to attack the project, though. And Jake Heaps,
of course he did.
And by the way, Jake Heaps was there. Jake Heaps joins us at 8 this morning. He was down there for all the tapings. He's been on the inside in a bunch of unique ways. He'll be fun to talk to at 8.
Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. The price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, did you see this news? Adam Schefter saying that Tom Brady won't commit to playing in 2018. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like the Seth Wickersham story. Talking about some of the problems internally with the Patriots are there. You can understand there's two things that at least I think stick out. Number one, the fact that Tom Brady's trainer is one that he kicked out unceremoniously. That didn't go over very well. It also affected Rob Gronkowski. I think secondly, I think you can see that maybe this is a little bit of a contract play for Gronk and also a contract play a little bit for himself, because he's in a great bargaining position, because with Jimmy Garoppolo gone, they have no backup at this stage. They have no future at this stage. And so I think I'm sure he's going to play. He's training and doing all the right things, but it does show that the Patriot way with Bill Belichick has some bumps in it.
Hey, you see Russell last night? It's 4 episodes, 2 hours, SportsCenter special. You get a chance to see
any of it. I did not see any of it, unfortunately.
You didn't see any of it?
No.
Oh, too busy.
Got a wife just got home from rehab, yeah. So a little tied up.
Yeah, what do you make of that? We were just chatting, Salky and I, about Russell and any current player taking on a project like that. How challenging to fill in John Gruden's shoes and do so?
I think extremely challenging, because I think John Gruden did such a great job at it. I mean, he had the ability to kind of make fun of himself and then try to really get into the quarterbacks. And obviously the key is trying to get as much information about these quarterbacks as you possibly can, so you kind of get a judgment on it. But I think what it still comes down to the skills. I mean, I'll have to throw it back to you. I mean, how good was he with the interviews? Were the questions good, and was it a good flow?
It's just hard, John, right? I mean, you know this. In that setting, Russell is a star, and there's all sorts of him, but yet you want to bring out the guy next to you as much as you can. I mean, that's not even the most accomplished broadcasters and professional guys have a challenge doing that. So it was a little difficult. I enjoyed Baker probably the most out of them. And is Baker Mayfield really going to be the third pick in this draft to the Jets?
I think so, yeah. Everything I'm starting to hear, because I still think Sam Darnold goes number one to Cleveland. And it sounds to me like it's a choice in with the Jets, whether it's going to be Josh Rosen or it's going to be Baker Mayfield. And I get the feeling they like Mayfield better.
Do you?
I do, yeah. I think in this case, again, the way I have it divided is that, two teams are going for the big, tall, big throwing quarterbacks, and that's going to be Cleveland and Denver. And, of course, I don't see Denver taking Rosen. I don't see him taking Baker Mayfield. I can see him taking Josh Allen. Where I look at the Jets and the Bills, who are trying to trade up, they want the quarterback who can move around, maybe play a little bit quicker, and that would be Mayfield and Rosen.
Hey, John, it's always so complicated to figure out what somebody is worth in terms of trade value in the NFL, but Bill Barnwell had a pretty good piece kind of speculating on trades that teams could make either at or before the draft. He had two for the Seahawks. Tell me what you think of the value on each of these two. In one, the Seahawks trade their number 18 pick in the draft to Buffalo. They get back Buffalo's number 22 pick, plus a third rounder and a sixth rounder. What do you think?
That sounds about right.
Would you make that deal if you were the Seahawks?
Yes. Yeah, I would. And particularly getting that extra sixth-round pick, because that gets you up to 10. And I think you can probably get away with just the third, but if you can get that extra sixth-round pick. And I know that he's going with the numbers and all that stuff. No, I'd make that pick in a second.
All right, and then the second here is he has the Seahawks trading Earl Thomas and adding in their fourth-round pick, number 120 in the draft, one of their only fourth-round pick, excuse me, and getting back number 19 from Dallas, plus their third-round pick and defensive back Byron Jones.
Wow.
What do you think?
steal. I mean, that's more generous on the part of the Cowboys because, again, you're giving a high pick who can play cornerback or safety. You also, get that 19th pick in the draft. I still think that they're going to be reluctant, Dallas, to be able to give up that 19th pick because they really do need that to try to get a wide receiver. And so, anything that would have that 19th pick and more would be good. And obviously, the trade backs to get the same balance. I mean, because, again, most teams don't want to lose net draft choices. The fourth round pick, throwing in all that, but get 19 and Byron Jones, that'd be a steal.
You've said that a few times, that they need that pick in order to get a wide receiver. Are we sure? I mean, look, they sign Allen Hurns in the offseason, who's a pretty good player.
That's
this
one.
Is not a great wide receiver draft. I mean, in the second round, could Dallas get a Christian Kirk? Could he fall there? Or, I mean, I know you got Calvin Ridley, but there's not a ton of, I mean, there's no one who might be available in the second round because I haven't heard a lot of buzz about any of those guys.
No, there's guys available in the second round. They're just not that good this year. Mm-hmm. That's why if you're going Kirk, you're going Ridley, you have to really think about taking them in the first round because, I mean, those, they may not be first round grades, but they're probably guys that will go in the first round just because, most teams have like 18 teams that listed as first round grades. But no, I think that you really got to, because again, the drop off at wide receiver is bad as a drop off at defensive end, where all of a sudden, if you don't get that guy, you're getting a guy that's maybe ready for 2019, 2020, not 2018.
I'm curious here. I asked you yesterday whether or not, Earl's allowed or his agent's allowed to start negotiating with some of these other teams. How many games are going on right now, John? Because as I see this, I just step back. We talk about this every day. I think about it an awful lot.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to create a little market here with Dallas, you got to have somebody else. And we heard the name Cleveland float around a little bit. Well, John Dorsey and Schneider go way, way back, all the way to the Packers. Are there any little games that these guys play as GMs with their relationships, with the people they trust, kind of like realtors will do in the housing when you're bidding? And, well, I'm going to get this person involved, even though they're not that involved. And just how much gamesmanship really goes on over these next 8 days?
Well, not gamesmanship where you're trying to win the battle. I mean, it was gamesmanship in the sense it's like, okay, what can we do to accommodate? And what you try to do if you're John Schneider is that you identify the guys you have good relationships with, so when you're trying to make moves on the quick, you can do it within the first 2 or 3 minutes when you're starting to make a call. And that's what John does as good as anybody in the league, and he'll do it well if he needs to do some things with John Dorsey. I mean, you identify the Howie Rosemans and the guys that are like, okay, I can make a deal with him real quick, and you can do that. That's what John Schneider does. He'll sit there and then start to contemplate before the draft, okay, who can I make moves with quick? And it's a gamesmanship that it's more of a positive game than it is a negative game.
That's cool.
Wild card time.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card.
Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
Have you ever seen a ventriloquist, a psychic, or a stuntman in action?
Yes, I've seen ventriloquists at different times. I mean, not often. I mean, I have to go back many, many years to be able to see that because I remember seeing one in person there, a magician. In fact, my ex-barber used to be a magician, and he was a guy that was very good. He could make that ball disappear and do all those things, so it's nice when you're getting your hair cut to all of a sudden see the razor disappear, so that's kind of nice.
Whoa, let him finish. Okay, uh-huh.
And now what was the third
stunt? You ever see a stunt man?
Not in. I'm trying to remember. I was at one movie set, but they really didn't have any stunts. It was like The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh, and so there was no stunts in that one. It was just a bad movie.
How about a hypnotist?
A hypnotist?
Yeah.
Never been with one, so I've never seen one in action.
I would love. Oh gosh, Howdy, should you, me, and Clayton go down to the fair? The hypnotist performs down there. Should the three of us?
Oh, I love that.
Can you imagine?
Beautiful.
That would be.
I mean, could you imagine the wild card Friday that the hypnotist would plant in Howdy? Yeah.
Be a great fan fiction Friday. Goodbye, John. We'll talk to you tomorrow. You. There you go. John Clayton with us every day at 7:50. I got to go through this Dallas scenario. I'm sorry. I'm just not buying that way.
Hey, goodness. All right, go.
Well, do you really, Dallas needs a wide receiver.
Yeah.
So they're going to draft somebody who shouldn't be in the first round, rather than trading that first round pick for an all-time great safety? I'm sorry. I don't buy that.
I know.
Like, nobody needs a wide receiver that bad.
Yeah, the Titans didn't took one at 5 last year, and the Chargers didn't.
Yeah, how's
one
that
top
going
10
for
last
any
year,
of them,
and John
especially
Rock,
at that position? I'm sorry, I don't buy that. You'll find a wide receiver somewhere. I don't think. I mean, look, Jerry Jones. Who knows what the heck that guy's going to do? So maybe John's right. I just don't see their need for a wide receiver demanding the number 19 pick and making it impossible for them to.
If
make
you
a
don't
deal.
Understand that, I don't understand what you sent to us yesterday.
What?
Someone in this building keeps charts of their Jeopardy performances? Is that
next
true?
I'm Brock and Salk.
Heritage Distilling Company's BSB Lounge at the ballpark.
When you purchase our award-winning spirits, remember to choke up on it for better control. Then send it down like a trip back to the minors.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
All right, Brock and Salk, hope you guys are having a good morning. We are 8 days away from the NFL draft. Seahawks Draft Lounge, that'll be our coverage, all on 710sports.com. Going to be a lot of fun. All video coverage of all three rounds at 710sports.com. We're just going to be hanging out, watching together. Hope you guys will join us Thursday night. Bob and Danny and Wyman will be there, and Clayton will be there on Thursday night as well. Friday, Brock, it'll be me and you and Wassel and Stacy and other people going to be around, and then Saturday, you've got Danny and John and Jim and Groz. So, 3 days of different coverage.
I love the draft, man. I love this time of year. Yeah, I really do. A roster construction standpoint, so much fun. The draft brings back memories for me. By the way, Lydia, playing that song, can you picture me back in the day, my 83 T-Bird with the Kenwood face, like bumping that on campus, pulling up to the weight room at the UW, like, yeah. California knows how to party and just pop that face off, put it in the pocket.
Yes, I absolutely can.
Cool.
That's amazing.
Cool. Can you, Saul?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I can't.
Right. Okay.
Was that in the age where your CD player in the car had a remote, or was that too early?
Ooh, I think that's too early. The 83, Damon had that sucker put on there.
Is there a Christian music version of that song that I should know about?
I think I did have some edited versions.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't go
around bumping.
I mean, you're not bumping like curse words in your car or anything, right?
I was bumping
not
that
in college.
Yeah, man, that 83 T-Bird. Okay, I was rocking that thing.
Text message, Salky, the draft is at Jerry World. How would it look for him not to have a pick on the first night?
Mm.
I mean, I think it would look okay if he had Earl Thomas, right?
Yeah. shiny Earl Thomas.
The Dallas fans would be pretty happy with all that. So, hey, did you hear this yesterday from Wyman? this is unique. So, this is Dave on his show.
Okay.
On Danny, Dave, and Moore yesterday afternoon. And Dave was explaining what he does when he... So, Dave's, he watches Jeopardy like a lot of people do.
Dave, a guy that likes the draft.
Stanford guy. Very smart.
Likes numbers, likes things, more particular than maybe you would think, and a very sharp guy.
But my dad watches the Jeopardy every day. Like a lot of people watch Jeopardy
every
day.
Sure, keep your mind sharp.
Absolutely. It's a good thing to do as you're getting older. This is what Dave said, though, about the way he watches Jeopardy.
It's kind of like when I play Jeopardy at home, I get to pause the TiVo and come up with the answer. Possibly look it up on the internet. That's how I...
No, have you done that before?
What, paused it?
Have you paused during Jeopardy?
Oh, yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I know, but that's okay. I just want to get the answer.
Doesn't that take the fun out of it?
No.
So when Alex Trebek comes on and says the answer, you go, and you feel good that you had it?
I don't have a buzzer. Otherwise, I could buzz in. So, yeah, I give myself that leeway.
All right, so Dave cheats at Jeopardy.
All right. I have a sheet that I fill out, and I actually write in the categories, and I'll keep my score.
Hold on. I want to make sure people truly understand what Dave just said. Not only does Dave cheat and pause, but he keeps a chart of how he's doing in every day of Jeopardy.
I have a sheet that I fill out, and I actually write in the categories, and I'll keep my score. And then if I actually win, because there's been a couple of times where, and I also write down N-O when nobody else gets the answer, and I get it.
You keep track of Jeopardy at home?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, my God.
That's how I keep myself sharp, Jim.
How often do you do this?
Well, I've been doing it like for the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Are there nights where you would have been crowned the champion?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Seriously?
I hang on to those. I hang on to those sheets. I'll take a picture of them on my phone and send them to you.
When you go into
I won $45,000 one night.
Well, when you go into Final Jeopardy, do you bet at all typically, or
sometimes
do you save some of it?
Depends on the category, Jim. It's something I think I might be good at.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's crypto. He's playing kind of crypto Jeopardy, right, in this crypto world with his own numbers and his own winnings. Wow. I would not. I feel like I know Dave. Dave and I are actually going to be co-hosting together a couple shows this week.
When is that?
That is, what's today, Wednesday?
Well, today's Wednesday. You don't have a lot of time left.
Thursday, Friday.
Okay, you guys are filling in for Dory.
Yes, we are.
I hope this will come up.
It will absolutely come
up. Do you
up.
Have quirks like this?
Not like that. And I don't think Dave did.
You're going to distance yourself.
He has idiosyncrasies like he packs the night before and exactly. Like brushes his teeth when he wakes up.
No, this is just the ultra little competitor, right? And I guess watching Russell last night with these QBs, listening to Wyman's stories about Dave Craig being the most annoying competitive guy, watching a Little League game last night that was so annoying competitively.
Oh, that was like, an annoying game.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not going to get into that. But just watching just hyper-competitive, and Dave is hyper-competitive. So that's his outlet right now with the kids out of the house. Where I'm like that is... And you don't really know this, but it's on a golf course. And now you know it, like I'll have a poke fun when we get to 17 or 18, but you don't know that I keep track of like everybody's score on every hole. Like I know what everybody's actual score is.
You what?
I actually know like what everybody's score is or should be or could be. So I know like on every hole I'm tracking everybody's shots. And I don't write them down or I don't keep sheets of it or anything, but I absolutely, and it's mostly because of Damon early on when he and I would go at it, we're both terrible. And, you know, maybe there's a little fudging here or there.
Oh, wow.
Or Mike Heward, you know, who, by the way, did not fudge and would not fudge. So there was always this level of accountability, even though none of us could really play the game very well. But Damon and I, really bad, real combative, bad, don't golf together anymore. It's no fun. It's no fun for anybody else to be around. And nearly fights on the golf course because of it. So, but that's where some of the roots are.
Do you judge the discrepancies within?
I try not to, Litz. Yeah, I try not to.
Good for you.
I try not to do that. You know, Jim Caviezel made it hard. You know, Jim Caviezel. We played around with him, and he was so honest and he was so thorough because he had played a golfer. What movie was that? He had played a golfer in a movie, and we played just 9 holes, and it took 3.5 hours. It was on my birthday. Mike Heward was done with the whole thing. He was done. And maybe even made a line like, come on, Jesus did the world in 7 days. Let's go. This hole has taken 45 minutes, which we all still remember to this day. But, yeah, that's one of my little quirky things with golf.
That's a little quirky.
Yeah, it's a little quirky.
I don't know if it's quite keeping score during Jeopardy and pausing it to get the right answers, but it's quirky a little bit.
I don't have anything like that, but I do Google Maps myself to every location, whether I've been there or not. Every single time. I always Google Maps myself. I Google Maps myself to work. I Google Maps myself home. So
really?
I know exactly how long it's going to take me, or I can forecast how long it might take me, or whether there's a new route I can take that would save me some time.
Do you try to beat the time?
Yes.
I try to beat the time.
That's actually a pretty good idea. Like, I could get into that. Like, I definitely try to get from point A to point B as fast as I possibly can. Mm. That's a good idea. It's like get an estimate of how long it's supposed to take and try to beat
it. It takes me 24 minutes to get to work when there isn't any traffic on an average morning. So I can get there pretty quickly, but it's 38 minutes if I take the alternate route if there's no traffic. So I do a lot of guesswork.
If I hit my two lights, it's 8.5 minutes. It's 8:35 to the bottom of the hill if I hit the two lights. And then, it's about 7. Yes. Yeah, I guess a little wacky that way.
Might
too.
Be the worst segment we've ever done.
Sorry.
That's okay. Kyle, do you have anything that you'd like to add to this?
I'm very judgmental around a campground, a WCRV lot. You're walking around, you're checking, do they have the gas fireplace? Oh, they're still burning wood. They're going to stink all weekend. Oversized lawn chair. Oh, dual slide out? What do they have? Oh, wow. Do they have the oversized propane tanks? Okay, I respect that. So, that's a big part of that community.
Keeping Jeopardy and keeping the sheets, is this what we're destined to one day?
I hope not.
In our 50s, late 50s, mid 50s? Maybe. Never know. They would not have guessed that about old Wyman.
No, I don't think I would have necessarily guessed that either. He had told me that earlier in the day, and I don't know. It didn't really faze me. He kind of told me. I was like, okay. But I wasn't expecting him to go on air with it. I thought
it
was.
Did it faze you when he called his DVR his TiVo?
No.
That was a little bit of a reference. What does he say? TiVo?
We used to have a TiVo. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, sometimes
you used
those,
to have a TiVo.
Right. I mean, sometimes those terms take a long time to kind of die off. I can understand that. It's like a Xerox or a Frisbee or something. You know, like those are company names. They take a while to die off. All right. Well, we were going to talk about things ending well, but I think the only thing to do is just end this segment now because there's no way it ends well, like a lot of other things in sports. Coors Light's Blue 42 next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Salk, old terms take time to die off. Frisbee, what else would I call a frisbee? Well, you'd call it a throwing disc or something.
Yeah, flying disc.
A flying disc. Yes. Frisbee's just some company, or it's the name that Wham-O gave it. A Wham-O frisbee disc. Don't say that too many times on the radio.
Dude, you could be on Jeopardy, man. Whammo. Take on Dave.
Oh, I don't want to. No way. Depends. Do I get to pause and Google it? Because if I get to Google, I feel like I can do that faster than Dave.
I think your technology and search engines, I think you'd get there faster.
I feel like if it's really just a battle to see who can look stuff up the fastest, I'll beat Dave. I'll take him down. Yep. I'll take down the giant.
No, you only get four pauses a game, okay? The two of you, only four pauses a game.
It's like mulligans on a golf course?
Yes.
All right. Question number one for you, Brock. Coors Light's Blue 42. You watched Russell last night in QB to QB. Learn anything new?
I did. I like this term. He called it gap. Yeah, we call those gaps.
Gaps?
Yeah, we call those gaps. I had never heard that term before. And he was with Baker Mayfield. And Baker was like, man, I wish I had this play back. In that Rose Bowl, this interception here, I wish I had a couple of these plays back. And it seems like this was Baker. In those big games, there's three or four plays that always determine it. And Russell's like, welcome to the NFL, kid. We call those gaps. Game-altering plays. And there's three or four of them, largely in every game, especially a highly contested game, and most are highly contested in the NFL. And when you really think about that, in those terms, game-altering plays, and that's the way Russell looks at it, doesn't his whole playing style make sense? That he's going to wait for those game-altering plays. And against Arizona, and they showed his little spin around, and that was a game-altering play in that moment. And he's going to pick and choose his spots, right? Kind of like a pitcher, a crafty pitcher. And it was a good discussion again last night. I loved it with Dan Wilson and Goldsmith and Blowers in the booth, talking about the third time through a rotation. And those QBs that understand, Ben Roethlisberger understands, Drew understands. Those guys get it, man. It's not a game-altering play on every play. It's not. You're not going to chase down every play in the outfield. It's not. But when it's there, man, you better capitalize. And more often than not, that determines the outcome of NFL games.
There's an interesting crossover to baseball there. It's funny. I was thinking about that, not last night, but two nights ago, about how the game turns on one or two at-bats. Last night's not really like that. Sometimes the other guy just dominates you and, you know.
Yep.
The game turns on the fact that you can't get a hit off of Lance McCullers. But it's amazing how often baseball is the same way, where it's like, all right, they got bases. In fact, the Mariners actually won a few of those at-bats last night.
Yeah.
Miranda got out of trouble twice and won a couple of those big at-bats. Just wasn't enough when McCullers did what he did. Question number two. Well, you got to see a lot of Russell's personality last night. What trait jumped out to you?
Two. Because you got to see a flashback to a whole lot of playmaking, too, Mike. And it was, I think, out of the four episodes, the best storytelling Russell did was his first game. And they went back to the first game against Arizona. You remember that game? Russell's like, Darnell Dockett is knocking the snot out of me. He's hit me harder than I've ever been hit in my life. And they're showing hit after hit after hit. And he's like driving me in the ground at this time and took my ear hole and stuffed it into the sod and said, welcome to the NFL. Like, it is remarkable. You could put the hit list of Russell Wilson for 6+ years and his toughness is off the charts. I'm serious. He has taken an absolute beating. Some of it, because that's his game. And he's going to hold the ball early in his career. And he's going to run around and do that. And he's going to make game-altering plays, scrambling, and sometimes sacrifice the body. But he is, A, so jacked. You see how thick and strong he is, even in that meeting with these guys. Like, dude, you're not Saquon Barkley, but you are jacked up, dude. And he has to be, because the number of hits that he's taken over the whole course of his career, I think evidence last night in that show.
You cool with him wearing a tank top and driving around in the car, though? Like, come on, dude. Don't wear a tank top driving around in the car. Ross, your sleeves fell off. Come on, man.
The kids call those bro tanks.
Yeah, well,
they don't call them tank tops.
Dude, you're driving around.
Frisbee.
Why are you making me feel old? Question number three. You know I'm getting close to my 40s. Okay? It's not nice. Sheesh, I got 10 days. Don't be a jerk. God.
I'm going to find you an old man, 40-year-old.
I'm not happy about turning 40 at all. Yeah. It's ruining my life. All right, question number three. I want to go off the board because you sent me over this QB velocity chart last night. I spent a while looking at it. So these are, for the last few years, all the velocities as measured by a radar gun.
Yep.
And how hard quarterbacks threw at the combine. They're all within a few miles an hour of each other.
Yes.
So it's funny when you talk about, like, you know, the guys with the cannon arms versus
52 miles an hour to 61.
Yeah. I mean, it's all in a fairly small zone, and most of them are sort of compressed to the middle.
Yep.
What'd you notice when you saw it? Because I had a few observations myself.
Yeah, that Russell was in the mid-50s. You know, I was kind of looking at the chart, and it starts on the left. And Josh Allen, by the way, it's relevant because he's got the fastest fastball of anybody at the combine, at least in the last decade or so, since they've used those jugs guns to measure it. He's at 61 miles an hour. Number two was Patrick Mahomes, and that was a guy at this time last year, Salk, I was saying to you guys, you just wait. Someone's going to draft him because his arm is that special. Josh Allen's going to get drafted in the top 10 because the arm is so special. And then I thought you would love it, and the reason I said that
I laughed so hard when I saw the bottom of this.
What was the two guys?
Zach Robinson, who we made some fun of. I remember Zach Robinson.
Oklahoma State.
He was with the Niners, right?
Yep.
But Max Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Tied for last on this list at 52 miles an hour. But it's totally unfair because they don't let you crow hop in this. Like, Max needed his crow hop to get it up to 53, 54.
Did. Yep.
That made me laugh. You know,
and then your boy with the fake
Ryan
headphones.
Lindley at 52.
Yes.
I tell you what stands out. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. When you look at this list, that being at the top or the bottom doesn't seem to help all that much.
No.
You look at the guys. It's cool that Josh Allen is number one at 61 miles an hour, but let me read you the other guys near the top.
Yep.
Pat Mahomes, we'll see whether or not this works out this year. He's yet to really play. After that, Brian Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that is.
Oregon for a bit,
yeah.
Right?
If you say so. Athlete. Logan Thomas, who we saw a little bit of in Arizona. He's
transformed
terrible.
To tight end.
Davis Webb.
Yep,
Paxton Lynch. He's not very good.
Nope.
Stephen Morris, who's now here in Seattle.
Yep.
Was let go after being undrafted. Zach Dysert.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that is. Tyler Bray.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins. Finally, Kirk Cousins, kind of surprising that
Correct.
He would be that high at
Correct.
59. Brandon Whedon, awful. Colin Kaepernick, Jared Goff. I mean, like, once you find, eventually you sort of hit a sweet spot in here where you start to see some quarterbacks. But, you know, Cam Newton was sort of in the middle of the pack. Russell was in the middle of the pack. I mean, looking at the guys who've had success, it's not like they're clumped anywhere.
Anybody in the 52 range that's had a lot of success in the NFL?
Near the
anybody?
Bottom.
Yeah, give me anybody at the bottom that you say, wow, look at that. You can have just a high school arm and still find a way to make it in the NFL.
The lowest on this list who was any good is
Chad Henne.
Dak Prescott, maybe?
Okay.
Dak Prescott at 54.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco at 55. See, that doesn't make sense.
No.
I've watched Flacco play. That guy throws the ball just fine.
Yeah, and some guys go into that, and I bet Josh Allen, I know Josh Allen's mindset at that combine was, I'm going to throw it 77 yards. We talked about this on his go around. We'll talk about it with Heaps here in a few minutes, who trains these QBs. You know, most of those QBs at the combine did what? Five hitch and throw, throwing rhythm. He was like, nah, forget it, man. I'm going to go Jeff George on
right.
you. And I'm going to drop back seven, and I'm going to hold it, and I'm going to throw it almost 80 yards in the air, and wow. And then, by the way, on this in cut, I'm going to rip it. I'm not there to throw it accurately at 55. I mean, I'm going to throw it as hard as I can in 61,
know,
the
I'm
hardest.
I'm just not sure I'm buying all this. There's like a 3 mile per hour difference. John Parker Wilson is at 58. Russell's at 55.
Yep.
Like, I don't know, man. I think our eyes maybe would tell us a little bit more. It is strange, though. Texter gets this right. Chad Pennington actually only threw 30. I mean, go. You would think that all he would be at least with Max Hall and the rest of those guys, but to only get to 30, that is rough. I don't know what Jake Heaps threw at a combine, but we will talk to him next. Very involved with what Russell is doing, what he's up to, and where he's going this year. It's next on Brock and Salk.